Welcome to the Religious Studies Project, hosted by David Robertson and myself, Christopher Cotter. This podcast is produced in association with the British Association for the Study of Religions, and you can visit our website at www.religiousstudiesproject.com.
One of the major dichotomies that religious studies has to deal with is religion and non-religion, but at the same time, there's another dichotomy that goes along, which is the sacred and the profane. So today, I'm with Dr. Gordon Lynch from the University of Kent, author of The Sacred in the Modern World and the forthcoming On the Sacred. Dr. Lynch is going to talk to us today about the sacred and its relation to religion. So, welcome to the Religious Studies Project.
Great, thank you. It's great to have the chance to talk about this.
It's good. Brilliant. I guess the first question is, hopefully it's a basic question, but it might be a very difficult question. What is the sacred?
Well, I mean, clearly within the study of religion, the sacred has been thought about in very different ways. And I would distinguish really between two fundamentally different ways. One is to think about the sacred in ontological terms. And this is the kind of approach that people like Rudolf Otto or Mircea Eliade adopted, where they're fundamentally interested in some kind of dimension of existence that they refer to as the sacred, some kind of essence to life, which then gets manifested through different cultural forms and through different kinds of human emotion, through different kinds of religious experience. And so the interest there is on this kind of core phenomenon of the sacred, which albeit takes different cultural forms. The approach that I'm working within could be described as a cultural sociological approach, and that comes out of a particular reading of the work of Emile Durkheim, where the sacred is understood not as a kind of core, essential, universal phenomenon that's kind of out there in the structures of the cosmos or deep within the human person, but something that happens in social groups, that's a way in which social groups construct moral boundaries, give particular forms of symbolic meaning to particular phenomena, where there's, in a sense, a degree of arbitrariness there. I mean, Durkheim said that anything in principle could become a thing set apart, could become something sacred. And so I'm really interested in how these kind of cultural structures of the sacred, how these processes of making things sacred, keeping them sacred, fending off profanation, how these take place in different social contexts, where the content of that is very, very different in different social places and in different historical moments.
Okay, you've now set up this interesting dichotomy between two competing conceptions of the sacred. Could you explain to me why we shouldn't have the ontological, because you clearly favour the latter kind. Is there a specific reason that dissuaded you from viewing the sacred in that type of framework?
So, I mean, obviously with the kind of ontological position associated with the work of Otto and Eliade, there's been quite a substantial critique of that within religious studies in terms of writers from a post-structuralist point of view saying this is essentially a kind of historically situated construct that these scholars are imposing onto different times and different places. And that's certainly there in the background. But I think there's also kind of more recent scholars, people like Thomas Shordas, who kind of take on board that kind of post-structuralist critique, but still see there as being something essential in the human embodied experience that gives rise to sacred experience. But I think for me that the main problem is that what happens with that ontological understanding of the sacred is that it tends to always refer back to that core ontological source, to that single experience, that single source. And so the particular manifestations of it are really just read in relation to whatever their kind of originating source is. And I think that leads to potentially a lack of historical sensitivity to the very, very different forms that sacred forms can take in different moments, the different ways in which things have become sacralized for different reasons at different moments in time, the different shapes that sacred structures take. And I think another thing that ontological view does is it actually blurs the distinction between the sacred and religion, because what's taken to be sacred is often seen as simply being kind of cultural manifestations of religion, religious traditions, rituals, spaces are really just seen as manifestations of this core sacred experience. Whereas the cultural sociological approach makes us think about, it actually puts the religion to one side for a minute and makes us think, are there actually core forms of sacred meaning in society that actually, say in the contemporary world, inform both religious and secular lives, that actually the sacred may be a more fundamental source of meaning than, say, religious identity or religious meaning?
So the sacred-profane dichotomy operates independently of the religion-non-religion dichotomy in that sense?
I wouldn't say it operates independently or operates separately, but I would say it's filtered through them. So, I mean, one of the things that I would contend, and I think this a wide range of scholarship on the formation of the nation state and nationalism, this wouldn't be a particularly controversial view, but that one of the dominant sacred forms in modernity is the rise of the nation as a kind of sacred moral reality. Now, if we look at the history of kind of modern forms of nationalism from the early mid-19th century onwards, it's clear that there can be a common sense of sacred reality of the nation which gets worked through in both secular and religious forms, where there's actually a core sacred commitment, but that actually may at times be filtered, refracted through a particular set of religious symbols, which we see kind of, for example, in the new Christian right in America for now. But equally, it can take kind of secular forms of nationalist movements as well. But in a sense, the religious and the secular may become filters, if you like, through which these deeper sacred meanings are expressed. But the sacred is a more kind of fundamental reality that actually people from religious or secular or non-religious backgrounds may actually share together.
Thinking along those lines, if the sacred can be both present in the secular and the religious domains, and thinking in terms of, like, for instance, the critical religions project and the kind of criticisms they've levelled against towards religious studies, in your conception, in the ways that you're now talking more about the sacred, does that mean that the religion-secular distinction actually begins to fall down on your framework?
It's certainly something, I mean, sometimes I've said that I think it's something that we should suspend, that it's something we shouldn't start with, as if we assume that these are kind of the kind of, this is the key binary that we should be working with from the outset. At other times, I think it's helpful to think about how particular sacred commitments may be shaped differently through religious or non-religious institutions. But yes, I think that's right. I think there's the kind of project of a cultural sociology of the sacred that I'm talking about. I see that as, in some sense, a distinct, though related, project to the study of religion. And I think that can be claimed as a particular approach with its own set of kind of theoretical constructs and perhaps its own kind of methodological implications of those. Now, I still think there's another kind of related and important area of study, which is the study of religion, which in a way that can, I think, be aware of the kind of critical turn in the study of religion that you're pointing to there, which still has considerable value, but I don't think it's the same as this cultural sociology of the sacred.
I'm now curious, this may seem like a tangential question, you've now made, before, when it was the ontological understanding of the sacred and you could relate the sacred to religion and the connection was there and it was obvious, you've now taken away that connection. So if religion isn't about the sacred, what is religion?
Right. Well, I wouldn't say that religion is necessarily not about the sacred. In fact, it's very unlikely if you have sacred forms, and I think in the modern world we do have a simultaneous presence of multiple sacred forms, not a single dominant sacred form, that religion will filter those at some point. So whether that be the kind of sacrality of the nation, the sacrality of the care of children, the sacrality of human rights, the sacrality of nature, all of these can get filtered through religious forms, and in a sense religious ideas and practices and communities have been important carriers of those forms of the sacred. I think there's also a sense in which one of the things that I would argue is that historically there was a significant shift in the basic structure of the sacred from early sort of classical medieval civilization, where the sacred really took the form of a hierarchy of relationships between heaven and earth, where sacred obligation consisted of adhering to the demands of where one found oneself in relation to that sacred hierarchy. So, for example, the Crusades were kind of commissioned, at least in part, on the basis of a particular group's rejection of the authority of Christ as mediated through the Pope. But what we see from the Reformation onwards is a shift away from that towards more ideological forms of the sacred, where I think Luther, for example, institutes that by moving away from a sacred hierarchy to the sacred idea of scripture as a kind of sacred authority. And with the kind of secularizing processes in the centuries after Luther, we see that taking a kind of attaching itself to sacred ideas, say, of the nation or of human rights, particularly from the 18th, 19th century onwards. But the point that I'm getting to there is that I think even contemporary forms of religion, that older sacred hierarchy actually still persists in some contemporary forms of religion as well. There's kind of a memory of Christendom, for example, that persists in some forms of religious practice or ideology, where actually adherence to a particular chain of authority is actually a kind of sacred demand. So I think religion also, in some instances, carries its own longer historical memory of a particular sacred form as well, that traces back into that medieval period.
Okay, so you've given us some brilliant examples of understandings of the sacred in more historical terms. What about the modern context? I mean, we've made this discussion about that the sacred can be applied as equally to the secular as it can to the religious, but for some people, they'll be wondering, well, what do you mean by the secular? So do you have some case examples of the sacred in the secular context?
So, I mean, I think one of the things, and here I distinguish my work from some other people working on the sacred at the moment, in that I would be very reluctant to talk about the secular sacred, because I think it assumes that sometimes when people talk about the secular sacred, they talk about kind of the sacred values of liberal democracy or the sacrality of human rights or the nation, things that I've just been talking about. But I think what that can mislead us, in the sense that these sacred forms can be equally powerful for religious groups as well. So I mean, if we think about, if you look at the website of the Evangelical Relief Organisation Tear Fund, they, and I think have gone through quite a significant change with this over the past 30 years, but now they would say that it's very important that they see themselves as delivering aid to people regardless of their a wide range of kind of sort of markers of identity, gender, race, but also kind of religious orientation. And in fact, Tear Fund, I understand, now employ more Muslims than Christians. Mm. So there's a sense in which Tear Fund reflects the kind of wider impact of a humanitarian sacred, which also gets expressed in secular forms. So I think, for me, one of the key tasks right now is to really unpick what the dominant sacred forms are of modernity and how these intersect, how these are related to each other, without necessarily assuming that we can package these neatly into religious and secular forms of the sacred. So, I mean, for example, if you take the care of children, which I would argue has become sacralized at the point we're at now in the early 21st century, it would be very hard to say whether that's a religious or secular form of the sacred, because at the moment it may appear to be a secular form of the sacred, but it also emerges out of a particular cultural history of childhood, the emergence of the long childhood that Philip Ahrens wrote about, which has a very strong religious element to it. So saying whether this is a kind of sacred or religious form of the sacred seems not to the point to me. It seems more important for us to be asking what is the form of the sacred, what are the forms of the sacred in the modern world, and how do we understand their significance on social life, the kind of challenges, the problems that they raise for us, and how they kind of combine and conflict with each other as well.
That's an interesting point, because you're kind of hinting at this as you talk about the multiplicity of sacred forms, which is a slightly different point, if I'm hearing you correctly, from what Durkheim would make when he first started speaking about the sacred. I mean, do you see yourself as following on from Durkheim and just expanding upon it, or do you think Durkheim was a good first step, but you're completely reshaping the model altogether?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, I think a writer like Durkheim is, for this kind of cultural sociological approach, is, I mean, he's foundational in the same way that Freud is foundational, really, for any kind of psychoanalytic work. And Durkheim's sort of basic idea of the way in which ritual and practice and emotion and deeply felt moral sentiment and collective identity were all bound together around the sacred remains a kind of absolutely kind of central idea for this approach, I think. The problem with the elementary forms of religious life was that Durkheim continually alluded to the significance of the sacred in the modern world. So, I mean, all the way through the book, he's saying, yes, I'm studying so-called kind of primitive early forms of religion to get kind of religion in its purest form, but actually these sacred processes still work out in modernity in the way the attitudes that people have to national flags, for example, or the kind of cult of human rights. But he never really worked that out into any kind of detailed theory of the sacred in modernity at all. And in a sense, I think that's what makes his work in the elementary forms so inspiring, but also so incomplete as well. And so a range of writers since then, I think, have been trying to extend this project. And in a particular sociological trajectory, I see people like Edward Shills, Robert Bellarine, for me particularly Jeffrey Alexander, the Yale sociologist, as really developing that project much more substantially. So that in a sense is the kind of leading edge of this in terms of thinking about how these processes actually apply to modernity.
Okay, that's very interesting. I mean, I was interviewing Robert Orsi, who was making similar arguments regarding Rudolf Otto and the importance of Rudolf Otto for religious studies. And we've already mentioned kind of the ontological understanding of the sacred. But keeping on that theme, I mean, one of the arguments for saying that there is no ontological understanding of the sacred is the transiency of the sacred, that sacred forms are not necessarily universal or fixed throughout time, and they change. Mm. And one of your interesting topics is you talk about the role of the sacred in media.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, do you have any theory of the dynamics for the changing of sacred forms?
Can you say a bit more?
Sorry, yeah, that's probably a bit of a bad question. You talk about how the sacred changes in the media.
Yeah.
Through media perceptions. I mean, are we seeing that the media is changing public perceptions of the sacred, or is the sacred something that affects the media, or is it a combination of the two?
Yeah. So, if we think about the sacred as involving symbols and publicly shared emotion and something that groups are doing together around these kind of deep moral certainties, then the particular medium that works itself out through will depend on a particular social context. I mean, I think any society which has a strong sense of moral boundaries, those processes will be operating somewhere in that society, but the particular medium through which that happens will vary. So, but I think in contemporary society, I mean you could arguably trace this back, I mean, as Benedict Anderson does, back really to the start of the 19th century, even before then, in terms of the emergence of new forms of mass print media, that the media become a new kind of form of a new source of kind of public imagination, really, a new way of communities thinking about themselves, sharing particular kind of collective experiences together. And we see that, for example, by the sort of time of the Ukrainian famine in the 1920s, that actually people from around the world are experiencing collectively a sense of horror at the kind of profanity of men, women and children starving to death in the Ukraine. And we see the kind of first mass global mobilization of a kind of humanitarian campaign to relieve that. And that takes place through the newspapers, through articles and particularly through photographs of kind of piled up corpses or emaciated children in the Ukraine. So over this kind of time frame, public media, I would argue, become the primary medium displacing, say, for example, traditional religious institutions as the space and the mechanism through which people encounter these shared forms. So just coming into the interview, I just saw on the television on the way in that Rebecca Brooks being interviewed in front of the Leveson Inquiry today. And that sense of collective horror in July 2011 around the disclosures around phone hacking, about the hacking of Millie Dowler's phone, although it involved a profanity committed by the media, was also experienced by people through the media as well. And I think there's a sense in which the media can only, public media, cannot entirely reinvent sacred forms. I think when we're thinking about sacred forms, we're thinking about long cultural traditions that have emerged over a long period, over centuries by and large. So the media can't kind of reinvent new sacred forms. They may present them in particular ways, but at the same time, the media becomes a place in which their interpretation, their use may be contested. People may not be convinced by the ways in which they're represented through media as well.
And I mean, one of the slightly more controversial representations of the sacred in the media would be suicide bombings. I mean,
right.
They are very public displays of religious sentiment on the parts of the people who blow themselves up most of the time.
Yeah.
And they are, in a sense, using the media to express their own sacred forms. And I really wanted to use that example just now just to get you to talk about the relation of the sacred and the morality in that. Sometimes, like when you look at Otto's kind of understanding of the sacred kind of comes off as something that's always good. Do you always see the sacred as being something good? Or is it a morally ambiguous category?
No, it is. It is morally ambiguous in perhaps two different ways that we could think about. There's a sense in which deeply charged moral sentiment can be highly... It can be focused around something that's highly destructive. So, I mean, if we think about the great sort of totalitarian movements of the 20th century, people writing about political religion have written in detail about this. We can see how the kind of symbolism and rituals of the movements, say, focused around Hitler and Mussolini, develop a particular kind of... sacred mechanism. They become a particular kind of sacred expression of nationalism, which has hugely destructive effects. Because one of the things that becomes possible when people are in those moments of deep moral certainty that the sacred gives them is that it becomes possible to act in relation to things that are considered profane in ways that exceed what we would normally allow ourselves to do. And this gets more into the second point, that even with forms of the sacred that we may consider normatively good, for example, sacred commitments around democracy. Again, when we perceive profane threats to that, we can be tempted to deal with the profane in ways that go against the way in which we would deal with people in normal life. So if people in Guantanamo Bay are seen as kind of profane threats to the sacred centre of society, then they can be waterboarded, their civil rights can be removed, all forms of what so-called soft torture can be used on them without it troubling public opinion, because these people are seen as kind of subhuman, in the same way that that Jews and other kind of so-called kind of deviant groups were seen as subhuman within a kind of particular Nazi imaginary as well. So I think part of the challenge of a cultural sociology of the sacred is both to recognise what sacred forms might actually be worth cultivating in the modern world, and what normatively might be helpful, but also to make us more aware of the dangers of our moments of moral certainty as well.
I'm very conscious of time, so I'll ask you one more question. You've just mentioned the normative influences of the sacred and scholars' relations to the sacred, and maybe one of the consequences of the Durkheimian position is that sacred forms can be created and be controlled. So as scholars of religion, should we be taking an active participation in the propagation and development of particular sacred forms, or even the dissolution of sacred forms altogether?
Yeah, I mean, I think in a way, to go to that last point first, I don't think we can ever dissolve sacred forms, because I don't think it's possible to have a sense of a morally constructed or morally bounded society without a sense of the sacred and the profane of operating in some way. So I think that idea of a society without the sacred and the profane is unattainable, really. Although we live many moments of our daily lives not consciously aware of the sacred and the profane. I mean, Durkheim's a really interesting case in point with this, because he was someone who did absolutely crucial pioneering work in terms of our theoretical understanding of the sacred, but was also someone who was passionately politically engaged as well. So he was a kind of founding figure in La Ligue des Droits de l'Homme, the Human Rights League in France, actively campaigning against the anti-Semitic conviction of Captain Alfred Dreyfus through the 1890s. So passionately committed to ideals of human rights. And even in the First World War, when he's writing, he threw himself much more into kind of nationalist propaganda for France. This was in part because he saw German nationalism as inimical to the kind of sacred values of the human, of the individual that he upheld to. So his kind of political practice, and also his work in education, which often gets forgotten, really, because his chair in Paris was in education, in terms of creating a kind of structure for moral education through the French educational system, I think was an interesting model of how sociological analysis can be combined with a particular commitment to nurturing sacred forms. Now, I think we would be kidding ourselves if, as scholars, we thought we could kind of invent new sacred forms, because really what we're doing is merely dealing with the architecture of meanings that we're inheriting from the past, really, and in a sense we're kind of cultivating that. But the ways in which we do cultivate that, the way in which we generate critical reflection on its implications, what we perhaps choose to encourage, is absolutely key. And yet there's a paradox here, that by bringing that analysis of the sacred to it, by thinking about it in these terms, we actually become more conscious of these as social processes, and that can become very uncomfortable when we're at the same time experiencing things as deep moral certainties, and that's not always a very comfortable place to be.
A potentially uncomfortable reality that many scholars will have to face up to. I'm afraid we have run out of time, and I am conscious that you will need to go and catch a plane. So, Dr. Gordon Lynch, thank you very much again.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Well, that was the first interview we've had for a while with Jonathan Tuckett, and he was speaking to Gordon Lynch on the subject of the sacred. And we continue our series on the idea of the sacred next week with another interview by Jonathan, this time speaking to Robert Orsi on the subject of Rudolf Otto, an important early scholar of religion whose work is very relevant to the subject of the sacred. As always, we'll be publishing a response on Wednesday, this time from our very own Christopher Cotter. And as always, we'll be publishing our Opportunities Digest on a Friday. It's now available in a PDF as well for you to be able to print out or to send around your department. As always, I'll ask you, if you listen to this podcast on iTunes, to rate us. It's down at the bottom left, but that is a major boost to the project and helps us get the word out to a lot of people who wouldn't normally hear it. As ever, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, at Project RS, and you can leave comments, criticisms, suggestions, and rants on our website. But for now, thanks for listening.